Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back. And today we are going to get a little, well, we're going to get serious. We've been a little crazy the last few episodes. So today we thought we'd get really serious and focus in and just get right to the brass tacks. Let's talk about the best duos in the National Basketball Association right now. Were you not prepared for that?
Wow. When you said get serious, I thought you were going to talk about your favorite Magic the Gathering decks that you had back like a decade ago. So this is kind of a little bit, this is a misdirection for me, but I think I can pivot and talk about basketball.
This might be too personal, but I've never played Magic the Gathering. I've never gathered. I don't know how to do it. I've seen people gather. I don't know how to gather. I have to ask you something, though, before we start. Have you seen the film Honor Society?
Honor Society? Okay. Oh, is that, is it like a... About like a boys group of...
Not even close. It's not important.
Nope.
It's not important.
I haven't seen it. Nope.
Anyway, my wife threw this film on last night. We were watching it. She said, do you want to finish it upstairs? Sure. Let's finish it upstairs. TV upstairs, TV downstairs. Go upstairs. Can't watch it anymore. Amazon has decided that the movie expired in 23 minutes. Have you ever seen anything like this? Have you ever had this happen? In the middle of the movie, like an hour into the movie.
Wait, is it an issue with like once you start it on one screen, you can't go to a different screen? Is that what was going on with you?
No, I think my understanding is that the movie left Amazon yesterday. I don't know why it didn't leave at the end of the month. It just leaves on random days. And it left at a random time on a random day. There was like 23 minutes. I think if we had stayed on the TV and finished watching it, I don't think it would have like blacked it out. But because we went to start it on another TV app. Have you ever seen anything like this? No?
No, that's never happened to me.
Okay.
No. I'm also, like, if I start a bet, I'm finishing it.
I thought you'd have a bigger reaction about this. That's why I wanted to ask you while we were recording.
Okay, so you saw 23, do you have like a review of the first 23 minutes? Like, does it seem worthwhile from what you saw?
It was like an hour. It was like an hour in, and yes, McLovin, I really enjoyed McLovin, and I kind of want to know what all those coming of age, you know, teenage movies, once you get like over a certain point, you have to know what happened. Anyway, let's get serious.
And Gori Rice is in this. So I think she was in a Black Mirror episode with Miley Cyrus.
Well,
once.
No, more important, she's in Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling doing comedy.
Is she really?
Yeah.
I thought there were legitimately two people in that entire movie, so I must be mistaken.
There's like six people in that movie. Okay.
The stage play of the Nice Guy.
So the idea here is that there's been some fun basketball going on, and there are a lot of great duos in the NBA right now. There are some of the duos are basically new this season, which is exciting. And what we wanted to do is not just say which team has like the pair of two best players that you would take in a draft or if you were building around them individually or something, but look at them as a pairing and think about their strengths, their weaknesses, their synergies. And in my mind, Cody, instead of just one player plugging into a system and building around that player and thinking about how that player fits with other teammates, it's these two players coming together and how do you fill in the other three slots on the court? I mean, you could think about staggering, but for the most part here, right, it's like what's going to happen when you have two of those spots on the floor filled up and you have to surround them with three possible different combinations of lineups.
I'm really glad you started here because I purposefully didn't ask you about this ahead of time because I wanted to have this conversation here. When you were trying to think about your best duos, right, are you counting, because I know you just mentioned the staggering aspect of it, are you counting like the James Harden, Chris Paul type of duo from a few years ago where it's like this duo is so good because when they're on the court together, it's still a very good team because both of them are great, but their true connectivity is when they're able to stagger? Or are you actually like most interested in these two guys are on the court and their math together kind of adds up to more than the sum of the parts? Is that sort of what you're aiming for with this sort of discussion?
I think it's a little of column A and a little of column B because I definitely am thinking about the Chris Paul, James Harden thing counting. But as you've said so many times, and you had such great research on this over the summer during our summer bonanza into NBA history, most of the time you're winning with your stars together on the court. It's very hard to be like, I play one star 50% of the time and I stagger the other star 50% of the time, and that's how I made the NBA Finals. It's actually what happens when your best players are on the floor. So I will look at this and think, like, what happens when this guy goes to the bench? Can he also step up and run more offense or something like that? But for the most part, I'm thinking, who are the other three players I put around them? And what kind of versatility do I have? Not just in my lineups, but in building players and building teams and collecting teammates. Do I need a bunch of spot-up shooters? And spot-up shooters are easy to get? Awesome. Do I need a specific big man who can help these guys like survive? And that specific big man is, maybe there's four of them in the league. That's not good. So I'm really thinking about how the duo, the package the duo brings, and then what weaknesses I have to cover for, or what weaknesses they help me cover up for on given teams.
Yep. So on their actual teams right now, so obviously, like, the data you could look at, the film you can watch, is the literal teams that these duos are on, right? Like, you can't simulate in different situations and see what's going on. But, like, I tried to do that as much as possible, right? So I tried, like, looking at certain teams, looking at certain duos, and being like, okay, they do these sorts of actions. Maybe in a different situation with different personnel around them, I could see them synergizing a little bit better given these circumstances. So there is a little bit of like hypothetical thinking here. It's not just a black and white, like, oh, this duo is performing better than this duo, therefore they're better.
Right.
Because I think there's going to be a duo we talk about where a change of scenery, like nothing, I mean, things changed around them, but the duo themselves didn't change. But the scenery around them did, to the point where it's like, oh, wow, this is what we can do to unlock them. So I tried to be as charitable as possible, and I'm like, okay, how can we unlock some of these duos, and what could we theoretically see with them?
I would also say that, oh, wow, the scenery changed around them. Now it looks terrible, because I still might believe in the duo, but the rest of the team around the duo is a total mess. So, okay, let's, well, we're going to try to do 10. Okay, we're going to try to count down from 10. And Cody, I know you have a little existential dread about this, because for me, it was not easy. There are a lot of great duos in the NBA. Let me ask you something. We have not shared lists. We have not talked about this. Cody's already upset at me before we even started recording that I was considering so many possibilities here. Can I just ask you some teams before I get really into like the meat of my list? Because I think we're going to have a lot of disagreements.
I think we are. I genuinely do wonder how many disagreements we're going to have. Because when I came up with my list, like, I didn't even ask you ahead of time. I thought we were going to do five. Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, here's like five, six. I could get to like seven-ish, where I'm like, this is great. Now I'm looking at it. Maybe a couple other teams can sneak in there. Maybe I could round out a top 10. But to me, there's a couple of duos that like really solidly make up the top five. So I'm really interested to see where they're going to end up for you in this.
Okay. And I had the exact opposite experience. I was out here, you know, at the last minute, changing 17 duos around in different orders, trying to figure out who's for real and who's not. I just want to ask, can I just ask you, did you look at a duo combination on the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yes.
Okay.
So here, this is actually, I'm so glad you started. This is amazing. That's why I podcast with you. This is why we podcast together, Ben, because of you bringing up Cleveland right now. So there's a couple teams where I just wrote down the team name because I genuinely didn't know which direction, right? So I wrote down Cleveland with a question mark. And I think there's a couple interesting combinations of players you could go with. So I guess I'm going to ask you back with Cleveland. Did you go with the guards? Did you go with like the Garland Mitchell pairing? Okay.
I don't want that. I don't want that. See, this gets to the philosophical meat of why this is not just about taking the two best players in a vacuum, and why I really think when you get down to the duo, you want duos that enhance each other and complement each other. And even just by going from one player to two players, if you think about our top 10 players of the year last year that we did at the end of the year, you can start to get guys that you're like, why would you rather have the 15th and the 30th best player than two top 10 players? Well, if the two top 10 players don't work at all, then it's almost like my team is heading sideways and I have a lot of work to do if I want to build an elite team. So that's how I feel about Garland and Mitchell, where you just have these two teeny, teeny guards in the backcourt. They have similar skills offensively, and then they have similar problems defensively. So, yeah, if I were to pick someone from Cleveland I would pick one of the guards and one of the bigs. And I like the guard. I still like the Garland Mobley combination, but that's how I'd think about it.
Okay. See, okay. This is where I got held up with Cleveland, because you started this and you said, I'd probably pick one of the big men and one of the guards. And in my mind, I'm like, if I even have a question about which of the players I'm going to pick, they're not a top five duo. Right. So I kind of cast Cleveland aside when I was doing top five in my mind. I just kind of cast them aside because I'm like, if I can't solidly know which of the two on this team I would pick, they're not a top duo. Unless you're going to make an argument that they actually have two or even three top duos in the league. But in that case, I would expect the team to be a little bit better. So all of those cascading questions is kind of why I was a little bit lower on Cleveland in this situation.
Okay. Can I ask you another question that I'm sure some people at home have been wondering? Mm-hmm. Are we thinking playoff specific for this duo, or are we thinking more regular season? Go ahead.
I've been thinking playoffs. That's okay. But of course, you know, I'm gonna borrow an answer you gave me a little from column A but a little bit more from column B this time, right? Like when we're going for a sides and Thanksgiving, I'm gonna have a little bit of stuffing, but I'm gonna have a lot more mashed potatoes, but at the end of the day, they're gonna contribute to the same meal, you know?
Makes total sense. Yeah,
of course.
Okay, I did not have Cleveland in my top 10. Good. Let me ask. Good.
Sorry, Cleveland. I really like the Cleveland people, but they don't quite raise to the level of some of these other guys. I like the team. I like them.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay. So this is where we get into this thing of Cody could not believe that there are more than five interesting duos, and I could not believe that there were anything less than 16 interesting duos in the NBA. We are punting any talk of Memphis because Ja Morant hasn't played, right? That's what we're doing?
Yep.
Okay.
Memphis is out. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I wasn't super high on Memphis going into the season with Ja being out for 25 games. This is a lot worse. I did not expect them to be quite this bad. So I'm just interested to see like how the ship's going to be righted here. And I know there's an element of like, you know how good Ja Morant is. You've seen him in the playoffs. You've seen him in the regular season, everything else. I don't know. I just kind of want to see it this season. I want to honor the players that are actually playing right now.
Okay. The only point I want to make about Memphis, because I think Cody, before we recorded, Cody didn't know who I had considered and things like that, and he was apoplectic that Memphis should not be apoplectic. They should not be considered. The only thing I just want to say about Memphis is they are a very, very different team than last year. There's no Steven Adams out there. There's no Ja Morant out there. There's no Dylan Brooks out there. There's no Tyus Jones out there. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone as well in that rotation. Kyle Anderson used to play there. I don't know when that was. But like you've got all those players, and now the team that is playing most of the minutes, there's no Ja Morant, and the team that is playing most of the minutes next to Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane, Zaire Williams was in the G League last year, Marcus Smart is a new acquisition from the Celtics. He's missed, I believe, at least five games. David Roddy, Santi Aldama, John Conchar, Bismack Biyombo. It's just an extremely different team. Some of it might be poor performance from some of these players. Some of it might be fit, but also you just have different players that the quality is not the same, you know, 7, 8, 9 deep on the roster to say nothing of the starters. That's the only thing I want to point out about Memphis.
Yeah, I accept all of that. It's just I want to see Ja Morant play. I don't know if that makes me like just not fun in this situation. I just want to see Ja Morant play.
We're going to see how not fun you can get as because this next team is the most fun. This is the most fun team. How do you feel about De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis?
Yeah, I like them a lot. I'm a big fan of these two because I think they have some really interesting synergy on offense.
Yes.
Right? Because they both have like a skill set that really works with each other. Like the back cuts and De'Aaron Fox's like blinding speed and Sabonis just having his good timing with those bounce passes, that works great. Getting crushing ball screens from Sabonis while Fox is like running around them, dancing around, going downhill, great. It all works really well. The thing that holds me back is just like the playoff, the performances, right? And I know they ran into the Warriors last year, and the Warriors are great, and Kevon Looney was doing a really good job of defending Sabonis. So, like, I wasn't super high in, like, a top five sense, but they're definitely a team that I think, in my mind, competes with being a top 10 duo in the league.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. I have the same feeling. Mm-hmm. I think they also, you know, the defense is probably the thing that holds me back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because not only do you have two players who are potentially neutral or negative defenders, but then you have Sabonis at the big position, and Sabonis is a defensive problem maybe when you get to the playoffs, and then also he can't shoot and space the floor. So you kind of have like two big forces at that position potentially working against your lineup construction and some of your roster construction and some of your versatility in postseason series when you might want to change the matchup or something like that. So I think they're quite good. I think there's so many good duos in the NBA that I couldn't squeeze them into me top 10 list.
Let me ask you a question about these two. What, like, if you're building a team around them, and obviously you can't pick like, oh, I would take Steph Curry and Nikola Jokic. Like, okay, let's relax there, right? Like, Kevin Garnett's not walking through that door today. What kinds of players are ideal for building around Fox and Sabonis? Like, what are the kinds of, like, to me, I think the big man, the other big position, is really interesting. Like, what do you have, who do you have, or what kind of player do you have starting next to Sabonis? And then what kinds of guard or forwards would you want on the perimeter with Fox?
I'm going to give you an answer that I've given you before, and I'm starting, I think I'm going to adopt it as your shtick.
Oh,
okay?
Okay.
I think you want Jason Tatum at the four. That's
that's a very good player. I would take Giannis, Ben. Giannis and Tatum.
No, I would not take Giannis. I would not want Giannis and Sabonis. I don't think I would like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that would be an interesting little combination. I do. I think if you could leverage the fact that Giannis is great at cutting and the fact that Giannis can also handle a lot of rim protection duties that Sabonis isn't necessarily great at, they'd be cleaning up all of the glass. Like, no one would grab an offensive rebound. I think it's interesting. I think it's at least interesting.
Well, I see where you're going on defense. Yeah. And Giannis, of course, is sort of like the better version of the answer of Evan Mobley will cover. The Evan Mobley archetype will cover all of your weak defensive centers and things like that. But
yep.
Yeah, I was thinking on offense, and I have not enjoyed Giannis being stationed off ball or in the corner for the Bucks offense at all this year. And that's it's one of those weird things where you would have like Sabonis at the top, and what are you going to, lose all your delay action, Cody? A little delay action is going to go away. You're going to lose all your handoffs and all your big man fun in the middle of the court. That's where they clash hard for me. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Can I pitch you a podcast idea in front of our audience?
Right now?
Yeah. Can I pitch you an idea?
How long have we done that? Yeah, it's still, I mean, why not? We'll just go off the rails at 17 minutes. Sure. Yeah.
Hey, this is pretty solid. Like, I think before it was like around the 9 minute mark
Kyle was on, it was the 1 minute and 30 second mark. What's the idea? I want to hear it.
That might be the best segment we've ever done. I think the Floater 3 is maybe the best podcasting we've ever done together. The pitching idea that I had for you. What if, like, if we had the duos and we had to, like, build an ideal roster, but we could only have, like, certain numbers of players? It's like, all right, you can pick one guy that's maxed out at a second-team All-NBA, one guy, third-team All-NBA, and then you can fill with, like, role. It's not exactly like that. Like, the point is you can't take, like, a first-team All-NBA or, like, an MVP-level guy. I'm not saying we should do it now, but in the future, that might be an interesting exercise.
Well, we'll get to something like that in the future. Right. Who did I ask you about the New Orleans Pelicans players? Did I ask you about them?
I've been waiting for this
one. Yes, you've been waiting for me to ask about this. I assume you have very strong feelings about the situation in New Orleans, the players in New Orleans. So I'm gonna give you the floor. Are you considering them for this exercise?
Okay. Hold up. Before you give me the floor, I want to hear it straight from your mouth, Ben. What duo are you presenting from the New Orleans Pelicans?
Zion Williamson.
Okay.
And see, here's the thing.
This is the thing.
My heart really wants to take Trey Murphy the third. That's what my heart wants to do. But you said he hasn't played. So
I didn't say it. It's true, Ben. This is truth. Trey Murphy hasn't played.
Well, I believe you when you say he hasn't played. I haven't seen all the minutes of the Pelicans, and I can't trust these box scores. You know the internet. You can't believe anything you read there. I'm Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram are the current proposed duo, and I think it's perfectly fine. We don't have to get tricky. You know, there are things about the fit with a potentially, theoretically explosive outbreak season from Trey Murphy, but we have no idea if that's going to happen. So Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, perfectly fine duo to me. What do you think?
I just need to be blunt here, Ben. Do they have any synergy at all?
The two of those players?
But beyond the fact that both of them are good at basketball,
yes.
Do they synergize like at all?
Yes, because Brandon Ingram can shoot. So when Zion Williamson like creates that black hole in the paint that everyone collapses into when he drives in there, then that's the synergy. Yeah.
Okay. It's not enough for me. It's not like there's a possible world where, especially Zion matched up with someone else, I think he'd be an easy shoo-in for duo. Okay. I have nothing against either of these guys, right? I think even at the end of last season, Brandon Ingram, we've seen like there are times when the passing game, the creation game really steps up. The pull up, like his mid range game, he's relying on that mid range jumper a lot. I don't think it's anything new, right? But their play styles, when I watch the Pelicans, it doesn't sing for me, Ben. This is not a choir that I'm watching. I don't know what the opposite of a choir is. I inquire as to what the opposite of a choir is, but it's not ideal. They're not a duo that I necessarily would trust on just any random kind of team.
I wonder if Cody's going to change his tune on this in a few weeks if the Pelicans go on a... The Pelicans are so like up and down right now. I am so Pelicans curious. One night they're winning by 30, the next night they're losing by 30. If you're curious, Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram have played almost 300 minutes together in this short 15, 16 game season, whatever it is so far, and they are plus 8 per 100, and their statistics look nice, and the team's offensive rating is 119, which is nice, and I think they're still kind of building up to speed, so I'm very curious. I could see this being a duo, especially if Zion, you know, gets into great condition or something, that shoots up your board. But as of right now, I could not squeeze them into my top 10. There are so many good duos. I could not squeeze them in.
I feel like Zion, there's been a more of a creation burden as of late. Like, I don't think this is quite how they started the season, but I feel like there's a lot more of him kind of near the top of the key, passing out a lot more. And I've been impressed with his passing. I think this is probably the best passing season I've seen from Zion so far. But like you said, the Brandon Ingram shooting of it all, great. That's a little bit of synergy, but it also takes away some of the skill sets that Brandon Ingram has. Like, they kind of encroach on each other a little bit more than I would like. Again, don't come at me, Pelicans people. It's just two good players there. They just don't. It's just not doing it for me.
Is there anything better than an early season episode where you anger 20 to 30 fan bases? I mean, this is the best.
Listen, I'm not going to anger the Pistons because we're just not going to talk about them. Right? So they know it's coming.
That was what they call catching strays. That was just ridiculous out of nowhere. No one in Detroit deserved that at all. How dare you? I was going to take Asar and Thompson as the best duo, and you totally ruined it for me.
Hey, at least I didn't say Chicago, so it's only one fan base that I angered.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, who's next? Cody,
what's in that water bottle, Cody? Okay.
The end of a trimester is in that water bottle.
Let's get serious. I told you, I have to get serious today.
It's actually just water, people, just in case you're concerned.
This is very focused and analytical work of the utmost importance. The Houston Rockets. They're pretty good. Their two best players work pretty well together. Their two best players have had great success on the court. How do you feel about I'm not going to make a joke. I'm going to say they're two best players. How do you feel about Alperen Sengun and Fred VanVleet?
Okay. I was thinking you were going to say VanVleet. To me, this feels like a, I don't know, like a team that's been successful because of like the collective of it all, right? Because, you know, we talked about it last time where their offense, what is it? Is their offense above water at this point? I feel like, I don't necessarily know if it is off the top of my head. I could probably look at the thinkingbasketball.net database, but it's going pretty slowly for me, so I'm hoping that you can save me from this in just a second.
We're going to get you an internet upgrade for these emergency lookups.
Oh, look, they're above ground right now. They're like 0.2 points per 100 possessions, better than league average.
Beautiful.
The defense is where they're making their money, right? And Fred VanVleet, he's a good like guard defender, right? And Sengun has improved as a defender, but he's also not a world beater there. I just feel like the success of this team comes from a bunch of different guys that are able to play in the system. The Sengun ball of it all has been really nice, and I think it elevates a couple of these guys. Like I think somebody like Jalen Green, for instance, is just better when he's off ball, and Sengun allows him to go off ball a little bit more. And, you know, the defensive acumen that's been brought in with Brooks and VanVleet. Like, I think there's too many elements that want me to focus in on two guys and be like, yep, this is a duo I can build around. It's more or less just like, oh, I like the collective of this team in general.
I buy that to a degree. I'm with you like a good amount of the way, but I do think they have a few players that stand out from the other players. I do think Sengun is in some sort of budding stardom on the verge of, I mean, his offensive possessions are just really good. He's hard to guard. Yeah. He's really good. He's young. He's going to keep getting better. And if you look at it, what really piqued my curiosity, Cody, they've played 450 minutes together and they're plus 10 per 100 possessions. They're outscoring teams by 10 points every 100 possessions. They have a 119 offensive rating when they're on the court together and a 109 defensive rating. When they go to the bench together, only 140 minutes, but the Rockets are minus 2, which to your point is not terrible. Like the great, if you have a great duo, you have that Kobe Shaq, you have that Duncan Ginobili, you know, that Garnett and anyone else who ever played basketball. You have like just those two guys and you take them off the court. Even pretty good teams will be like, you've seen this, minus 4, minus 5, minus 6. So I think it meets your point halfway, but I also do see them as like being a legit kind of pretty good duo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let me ask you what's the word I'm looking for? Like a metaphysical math question.
We haven't even gotten to number 10 yet, and you're asked. Okay, metaphorical. Go ahead.
Metaphysical. We're going crazy right now. Okay,
sorry.
So Sengun, yes. Right? I don't want to spoil any upcoming podcasts. Okay. But Sengun, would you say he's like at least an all-star level player right now this season?
It feels like it's a small sample. So I would say over the sample that we've seen, absolutely.
Okay.
The question is it fluky? Does it come back? You know, where does he end up? In that range, sure. Yeah.
Fred VanVleet.
Fleet.
I got it mixed up with Greta VanVleet, who is a, puts on a really great show, by the way. Like that is a wonderful rock group that if you go see live, they do it right. But Fred VanVleet, who we're talking about right now on this basketball podcast, I don't know, he's probably like around a sub all-star. I don't know if I would necessarily call him an all-star player. And so if you have a guy that's an all-star level player and you have another guy that's a sub all-star, again, when we're competing with a top 10 in the NBA, I don't know if the math gets you to where you need to go. And I guess my question is like, how much can a two players synergize to like equal what even like an MVP level player and an all-star level player would be? Like that's a huge synergistic boost that I don't necessarily think I see from these two guys in particular on this team where I like the collective.
Well, MVP and all-star, that's really strong. I think I don't want to give anything away. But, you know, later in my list, if we ever get there in the next 2 to 3 hours, there will be the MVP all-star sort of groups are very, very, very good and very difficult to usurp. That leads me to my next. So we're not having Houston in our top 10.
No.
Okay.
I like Houston. I only
have one more team I considered for my number 10 position.
Okay.
And that's the LA Clippers. What did you do with the LA Clippers?
Do you want to just take the segment, Ben?
I don't want to take this segment.
Neither do I.
I do not want to take this segment. Yeah. I think we're going to have a Clippers video coming out, and that's why I don't want to take this segment. Usually when I spend a lot of time with a team and make a video, I have a lot of thoughts and there's a lot of interesting discussion points we can get to on the podcast. And honestly, sometimes we should do more of it and we forget to do it. In this case, it's a video that is not about the greatest basketball being ever played. Let's put it that way. And so I'm gonna learn from Cody over the years that we've been able to do this together. And I'm going to say, with all the injuries that these guys have and all the health problems that they present and their age and where they are at currently, I think when you add in the fact that you might not know how many games they're going to play, I have a hard time starting to take them over the duos that I ended up putting in my top 10. And if you were to ask me, if I were to cut you off and say, you know, what if I absolutely knew that they would be healthy in the entire playoff run I got, would I have them over, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 of the duos in my top 10? Maybe I'd put them in there, but they wouldn't be in my top 5 anymore. I don't think I'd have been in my top 5.
I think if we saw like peak Paul George and Kawhi from what we saw last season, they would be pretty close to that top 5 in my mind. Like, both of these guys are still just incredible. Like, we saw them in the playoffs really giving, as much as they played in the playoffs, like when they played, like they gave their best effort. It's like, oh my god, these guys can really go toe to toe with the burgeoning Suns at that point. Let me give you a stat. I actually looked this up and I would have been completely wrong if I had guessed it ahead of time. Across this Clippers season, this is much a maligned Clippers season. There's been a lot of people talking negatively about this team, things like that. When Paul George and Kawhi are on the court together in 460 minutes, they are plus 12.6. Like, everything that's gone on, this is still an elite duo when they are on the court.
Some of that is from the beginning of the year. They had like one or two blowouts, I think, against a really poor team. Because we've been tracking this the whole year. It was like plus 21 earlier. I think it's come down. Okay. And it wasn't, just to put more context on that, because I've been swimming in these numbers all week. The numbers last year were like plus 8, I think, over the course of the year. And in the past, a couple seasons ago, you know, 2020, 2021, you were looking at numbers like plus 12 to plus 16. So I think the potency of that duo alone has come down. And a lot of it is age and losing defensive verve and, you know, wanting the league is caught up as well. You know, you just can't just casually be like, we've got these two-way forwards. We don't need anything else. It's like, no, actually, you need like ball handling and decision makers, and you need those players to be good with their ball handling and decision making, and they need to be dynamic off ball. And there is an effort and an intensity and an energy level that is not always there. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even want to talk about these guys.
Here's what's interesting. Between 2020 and 2023, right? So I think, does that end up being like four seasons?
Kawhi missed one. Kawhi missed the 22 season. Yeah.
That's a good point. So it would be those three seasons. They're plus 12.7
yep.
when they're on the court together across those regular seasons. So this is a very good duo. But like you said, I think even like the way they play offense, like their motor level on offense is just something that doesn't synergize. But you're right, we spent way too much time. Ben, who do you want to talk about next?
I'm just going to jump into my number 10, Cody.
This is great.
Yeah. And as always, if you've made it this far in the show and you've never heard us do countdowns or things like that, we really think about stuff as ranges and it's flexible and malleable. But this one's so difficult and I have no idea how to parse these out that we're just going to walk through them in order. And I'll tell you how close I when we get to 5, I'll tell you how close I think 10 is or something like that. But I think just for the fun of it, just to get as many angry messages as we can, we just got to go through one by one. And number 10 for me, Cody, I'm doing it. Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler. That's my number 10.
I was wondering where these two were going to end up.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Just good. They're just good ball players. They're just good, solid ball players. They use their pivot feet, and sometimes they set moving screens, but they defend and they pass. And yes, they can't shoot. Okay, so neither of them can really shoot, but we can work around that because they run around, they hand off, they move, they cut, they crash the boards. You know, great defensive pieces. And I think offensively, they both work as second, third, fourth pieces on really good teams. The Heat are a team to me that's just like missing that explosive, like 2020 Damian Lillard, boop, drop him in there. And all of a sudden, the Butler and Bamism of everything don't go away at all. If anything, I think they get sexier. So that's why I like this duo.
I think what's really interesting is when you talk about some of the best duos across all time, across a season, people usually go straight to offense. But you're absolutely right in terms of their defensive synergy, because both of these guys are just like, they live and breathe defense. Like, you cannot discount the way that they just buy into the systems. Like, Bam, you know, for what the rim protection stuff, I think both of them are actually lacking a little bit more in rim protection, and I think that probably holds them back from being an even better defense. But both of them are physical, both of them are strong, and both of them are very switchable, right? And I think Bam, even at this point, is probably a better, like, straight up one-on-one perimeter defender across a wide swath of players than Jimmy Butler. Maybe Jimmy Butler's better when it comes to guys that are built more like him at the forward position. But then, you know, the shooting thing, I do want to say that Bam Adebayo's been a pretty solid mid-range shooter, at least. Like, it hasn't extended to three, but I know the long mid-range is in the mid-40s ish. He's like living in the short mid-range and long mid-range. Like, it's pretty shocking to me how many of his shots come from that area, and I think a lot of it probably just has to come from the Heat being a little bereft of offensive talent who can kind of create a lot. So he has a really tough diet of difficult shots, but I do think that it's the context that they're in, and I think we could probably see more of a, like, delay action 2020 playoffs Bam Adebayo that we saw a lot more, and I think that's when he really came on the scene. But I hate to be a nerd about this, Ben, but the both of them being on the court together over the last few years is not inspiring. Across those four seasons, they're like a plus five. And if you look in the playoffs too, like, even the bench minutes, like, Bam on his own isn't fantastic, which I know is kind of outside the scope of it, but they're not world beaters mathematically when they're on the court together. And I'm sorry if that, like, rattles some people's feathers out there, but I don't know, that scares me a little bit more.
Cody is on fire today. I think the counterpoint for me there, if we're going to get nerdy, is that, like, so far this season, you know, what did I say? The Rockets were minus two or something without Fred Van Vliet and Alperen Şengün. Is that what I said?
I think so.
That sounds about right. So this season, in 200 minutes, with these guys off the court, the Heat are minus 13. And that is the kind of thing that you're looking for. Now, they haven't had the huge multi-year. If you take that back over the last couple seasons, I think the Heat are like minus one or something like that when they go to the bench. So they haven't had the huge footprint, but I do think there is an indicator that the team is just not nearly as competitive without them. And then I think you have to think about the playoffs with these guys, because I think in the playoffs, starting with Jimmy Butler being able to provide more value in a postseason setting and raise his game in a playoff setting, and then just the two of them together and their skill set and what it brings and the type, like, They can play. We've seen it repeatedly since 2020. They can play against the best teams in the postseason, in the sport. And even when they lose and they're not the best players out there, they can still basically play at that level. Like, you need like unicorn Anthony Davis to come along to finally make Bam Adebayo not look like physically and just basketball wise, like, he can exert himself all over the court. So do you not have them in your top 10?
In that same time span, 2020 to 2023 in the playoffs, they're like a plus three together on the court, right? And actually, the bench outplayed them when they're both off the court. They're like a plus 6.8 in almost 270 minutes. So
that's just...
Listen, here's the thing. We talked about this a lot in the playoffs, and I think it's important to bring up. They're both very good basketball players, and they're flirting with the top 10 area. I didn't actually have a solid 10. I have like a 7 that I like, and I have a bunch of teams, duos that are competing for that 10th spot. But I do think the Heat have caught like ridiculous fire from not even think. The Heat caught ridiculous fire in the playoffs last year. And I do wonder if they didn't and they were eliminated earlier in the playoffs and we didn't see all this, if we would just think a little bit differently about them, a little bit of winning bias, something that I don't know if you've ever thought about the concept of winning bias before, Ben. I'm not sure if you've ever written down your thoughts about winning bias, but, you know, it's this concept that we might be blinded by the fact that they won a lot. And I think there's a lot of lucky, quote-unquote, three-point numbers that we saw from last year. They're both great basketball players. Mathematically, as a nerd, a little bit more nervous about it.
I did not expect this. Did not expect this negativity from you. Did not expect this.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
I'm just speaking. I don't know what I'm speaking, but I'm speaking it, Ben.
Well, this one's for you, Cody, because my number 9 is Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert.
I was wondering where you were going to go with that.
I like that combination better than Anthony Edwards and Cat. How do you feel?
I agree with that, but I had the same kind of issue with the Cleveland Cavaliers where I'm like, if I can't definitely land on one of them, I'm not 100% sure where I go. I like them both because they're both great. Like Gobert is just, I think that was against the Thunder recently. Like he was, and I know like Chet has a lot of buzz and whatever else. Gobert was doing an excellent job defensively. He was just everywhere. It was a very active Rudy Gobert. It was the kind of defensive player of the year, like montage that would be thrown when and if he wins this at the end of the year. But like beyond the fact that like you have one player that's an excellent defensive player and the other player is a growing excellent offensive player, do you see like a synergy between these two when they're on the court, the interplay of their styles when they are playing basketball?
I think the synergy is not really direct. I think it's more indirect. So you're not going to see like pick and roll lob passes and things like that, or just these devastating defensive possessions where they're swarming around like Jordan and Pippen or something like that. I think it's more the presence of Gobert and his force as a defensive anchor, and then Anthony Edwards on offense and defense, of course, but Anthony Edwards on offense as a guy who, no, I don't think his passing is good enough that he can just be MVP level, run all the offense through him, make all the right decisions and things like that. But you can play this sort of on-ball game with him. You can play a little off-ball with him. He can cut. He's athletic. He can get his own shot whenever he wants. He can push pace and touch the paint. There's a little synergy there maybe with him touching the paint and hitting Gobert on lobs or offensive rebounds that I, you know, the old Kobe assist. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to draw two guys. My big man's going to clean it up. So it feels more like an indirect synergy in the sense that I like their fit as a tandem to then fill in the other four positions on the court. And with them, I was really thinking about how good is Minnesota right now actually? Like, yes, they've had a great start, and there's a lot of shooting luck involved, especially on the defensive end. And how good can this defense be? How much are they missing? You know, what happens when Jaden McDaniels is playing full-time again? Like these are all the things swirling through my head. How good is the rest of their bench? But can you get another star out there? Can you get a movement shooter? How good would they really be? I think they would be really good. I mean, they're already good, obviously. We've talked about them a bunch this season, but I just think it's a great anchoring force to like have Gobert in the middle and Edwards on the outside and decide what you're going to, you want more wings, you want shooters, you want a point guard that can be the primary and Edwards is your secondary, like fill in all the cracks, do all these other things, give it to him when you need to, play that Jason Tatum type offensive role. I just think there's a lot there.
Yeah, and I think for a team that's not a great offensive team right now, like they are, we're talking about the Rockets. The Timberwolves are even that much better on defense. And I think that's an interesting, like, I don't want to say an Iverson build where you have like one strong offensive player and then you have a defensive system around him. But I do think that's the concept when it comes to Anthony Edwards and Gobert. And I think they're an interesting juxtaposition with Bam and Jimmy, who we just talked about, who I think have more of the synergistic thing. But I think these two, would I say it out loud? Would I say that I think Gobert is probably a better Never mind. Let's save that for for another day.
What is going on right now? I just want to stay in the nerd corner for a second since we've had this thread going in the last two seasons. So I don't think they were as good last year. Yeah, you're crossing the streams of samples, and Anthony Edwards is better this year. But in the last two seasons, Cody, the Timberwolves have been +3. With those guys on the court, and that's not the important number to me. The important number is when they're off the court, they've been -4. And, you know, you can corroborate this more than me probably. Looking at historical duos, +7, +8, +9, you want to get into, like, the double-digit on-off changes when you take the duo on and off the court to see your best duos ever. So I think they're, you know, you're starting to see a little bit of a statistical signal that they work really well together over the time they've played together.
Yeah. I'm with you on all of that. And I have to, like, both of these teams ended up in the same, like, morass of beyond seven and better than the tier under them. So I'm okay with the Timberwolves being here.
I think we're at number 8, which is not number 7. So I'm still kind of very interested in how you're feeling about some of these other teams I'm throwing out there. I think you're going to have thoughts about this one. My number 8 that I ended up going with, I don't know what I'm doing. What are we doing? We've reached the point in the show where I'm having a crisis about why we decided to do the show like this. Shea and Chet.
No.
Let's do it.
No.
Let's do it. Yes. Let's do it.
No.
Yes.
You need to make your case first.
What? I need to make my case.
You do.
Okay. When they're on the court together, they're Oklahoma City's +12. When they're off the court, Oklahoma City's +3. Chet is an awesome player. He's a rim protector. He can play screen and roll. He can pick and pop. He's an incredible shooter. He can be the ball handler. He can run inverted screens. He could pass. Shea can also play the pick and roll game with him, and Shea is a very good isolation scorer. And if you spread the floor, you have to respect Chet if you want to flatten out and create all that space for Shea. You can put Chet all over the court. You can put Shea all over the court. I mean, what more do you want?
This team's number 8, you said?
Oh, are you saying they're too low?
No, you have them at number 8, right?
Yeah, I have them at number 8, yeah. That's how many good duos there are.
There's going to be someone in my top 8 that you haven't even brought up yet. So I'm really interested to see who's getting the boot today.
I'm sorry. Wait a second. I've mentioned like 11 teams, and you're saying you have someone in your top 8 I haven't brought up?
Yeah.
This is going to be the best episode.
Okay. I don't listen. Okay. You bring up those sexy little plus minus numbers. I think they're still like almost as good when Chet's on the bench. And this happens with Shea and anyone on the Thunder. And the point that I want to make with the Thunder here is like this team is so good top to bottom, right? Like they have a lot of guys that are able to, especially with like the creation, especially with the off the dribble setting up of other players. Like Chet is somebody that really, he's a good passer himself. Like, okay, fine. He passes himself. He can throw passes once in a while. But like what he thrives off is the fact that this team is filled with a bunch of dudes that can pass the ball really well. Like if you were to line them up and just be like, hey, rank these guys from the best passers, I don't know where Shea would end up. Like, I don't know if he'd be, I don't think he'd be one. I think there's a case he might not even be number 2, right? And so I think that this team is just really built in a cool, funky way where they both are working in the system, but if you put them on sort of a more traditional team build, I don't necessarily think that they would be world beaters. And I know what you're saying, like Chet, great three-point shooter, great spacer, can bring the ball up, great defensive player. But I think like we were talking about with Kyle, it's the exact opposite of like Wemby's situation where it's like Wemby's in the worst possible situation for a developing big man that doesn't necessarily have this creation burden. So I think this is almost like a best of both worlds for both of these guys. And I'm just not sold on those two on their own in a playoff situation being a duo that I'm going to like hang my hat on.
What did you have for breakfast today?
I had like 100 essays, Ben. I've just had words pouring through my veins.
Was there a lot of red ink on those essays? Because who do you have in your time? Every duo, I'm like, how about this duo? And you're like, let me tell you, Ben, they're actually not that good. The cold water has been thrown at everything. I need you to tell me the duo that I haven't mentioned.
I don't know who it is because we have to get through everyone else. I have to see who's not going to make the cut.
Okay. All right.
I think, okay.
Look, if you are going to make an argument for Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma. I will not hear it, okay? We will not be doing that today. So go ahead. Yes.
It's offensive to me that you brought up the Wizards and Tyus Jones was not in that duo.
Actually,
Tyus Jones,
I really wanted Bilal Coulibaly from the Wizards, but I didn't think it would hit as hard. Number seven.
You're not going to put more of a fight?
No, I'm raising the stakes. I'm raising the stakes at number seven.
We're going to start connecting a little.
No, we're not. I want to see what kind of cold water you can throw on this, Cody. Number seven, now I start to get really like, is this five? Is this six? I don't know what to do, but I think this is the right place for him. I think it's a perfect place for him. I think if we had tiers, we could have the three below, these guys, and this is like a special duo that I know you don't like. Jason Tatum and Drew Holiday from the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
If you're watching on YouTube, Cody just sighed and shrugged, and he got out a red marker, and he's cracked his neck, and he's ready to go.
Can I write on the screen? Is this okay? I'm such a hater. What's happening?
What duos do you like? I don't understand this.
I really like Jason Tatum. Ben, the Celtics are so good. They're so good.
Yeah, that's why they're only seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's not a team exercise. I'm thinking, this is okay, so you want me to put up more of a fight? I don't care that OKC is plus 12 with Shea and Chet on the court, in the sense that if I were ranking the duos based on teams, they would probably be a little higher. I'm ranking the duos, to me, based on the duo. So
yeah.
To your point, some of that is like we get to see these players in either really good environments or really poor environments. As you'll see, I have some duos ranked higher that I think are in terrible environments, but it's a balance, right? So I'm the Celtics, to me, I'm trying to imagine what would happen if they had a terrible team around them. If you think that you can throw a terrible team on a roster, like we just mentioned the Wizards, just stick with the Wizards. And you took these duos and just stuck them on Washington. If you think that if Washington added Jason Tatum and Drew Holiday and they wouldn't be good, we could shut it down. Let's shut the podcast down. I don't know what we're talking about anymore at that point, right? I mean, they're going to be good, right?
Okay, so I agree with you. I think I came off a little bit more negative. I have in my like 8-ish column, I have like a tier of teams that I didn't know how to separate. And I'll just tell you right now, because we've mentioned all of them so far. In this tier, I have Fox and Sabonis, I have Edwards and Gobert, I have Jimmy and Bam, I have the Clippers, and I have Tatum and question mark, because I actually didn't know who to put for the Celtics, right? I didn't know who to put for that second person. I know it was like the preeminent Drew lover. Like, I just didn't necessarily know if he's actually the second best player on the team.
Okay, so just to jump in there, it doesn't matter to me, because I think, what do I get from Tatum and Brown, and what do I get from Tatum and Drew? And I don't know if you want to include anyone else, but to me, those are the best pairings that I see on the Celtics. And I think if you go through defensively and offensively what you get, I would much rather have the Tatum-Drew pairing than the Tatum-Brown pairing.
Okay, I 100% agree with that. I didn't know if you were going to like take a Tatum-Porzingis type of route here and be like the stretchiness and the defense and that kind of stuff.
Don't like it as much. I would rather get what I get from Drew, figure out ways to go small or get traditional rim running fives as big men or stretch fives as big. Because every time we talk about a weak offensive stretch five, my brain goes back to Jason Tatum and what you can play in the forward position. So I just think Drew and Tatum, I had them higher. I don't know what to do with them. That's why they're in their own tier for me.
Okay, you know, I'm going to backtrack. I have a weird energy, and I'm going to apologize to the world for it. I'm sorry for coming in with this energy. Like, when I'm looking at it, all of these teams are in the same tier, and I shouldn't get so... I'm in a wound-up type of mood. Like, I'm a little toy, and I'm just like... You know, I'm being twisted. I'm just being like sent off into the wild here. So, Ben, I think this is a very acceptable ranking. I have them in the same tier as all of the other teams that you just brought up, and I'm getting hung up on the ranking. I think Tatum and Drew is an excellent little pairing.
Number six.
we have a team that we're not... Okay,
this is the...
Sorry.
I cannot wait to hear this team. So... Number six. Yeah, so basically, I have six teams left, and you have seven. That's what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. At number six, I went with. Boy, this is tough. Maybe I should make them number five.
Wow.
I want to make them number five.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to make them number five. I'm going to make them number five. At number six, Cody, because I have to be consistent. I have to be consistent. If I'm going to be worried about the Kawhi, Paul George health age thing, I think the health age thing, I have to pay the tax properly here for this team. So I think it's number six is the LA Lakers. That's my number six.
Okay, yeah. They're my number five.
Yeah, well, they were my number five a second ago, but I just changed it. So the thing is, go back to what I just said about the Celtics. The team around them to me is not great, and it's the kind of thing that I'm so fascinated by what's happened with Austin Reeves, right? And when he was really clicking last year and came on last year, he gives them a playmaking presence that this kind of duo needs, because LeBron is going to be 39 in about a month, which is absolutely incredible. He's still playing at a very high level, but recovery gets harder when you get to that age, and playing 40 minutes gets much harder, and his horizontal movement is not what it used to be. And so you can't just rely on LeBron to quarterback incredible pick and roll offense all the time. You need another guy in that position. AD, similarly, as he's gotten older, now I think losing a little weight recently has helped, but he had a period when he came to the Lakers where he was more nimble, he was a little more perimeter oriented, he could get out in transition, and he had just started to work on some of his passing. He's lost some of that offensively. So these guys need help offensively around them, both in a primary playmaking sense and overall, still great defenders. And of course, just having AD, even just both of them as defensive anchors or defensive pillars is enormous. So that's why I still think they're in this class.
I'm going to make sure ESPN is listening very carefully as I start talking here. So LeBron James is in 21st.
Michael Jordan.
It's 21st season. LeBron is averaging 27 points per 75, plus 8 efficiency. He is shooting 79% at the rim. 79% at the rim. And he's still, for his rim field goal attempts, he's in the 95th percentile in the NBA. It's absurd. Like, watching this guy play, it genuinely doesn't make sense watching. And I think with this pairing, too, when I had them as high as I did, when I can start getting into, like, the top guys where I can actually start saying nice things about NBA players, so I apologize to everybody else. But this is, like, to me, the ideal duo, right? Not in the sense that, like, when you stagger, because in the sense, I should say, when you stagger them, you lose quite a bit, especially on the Anthony Davis side of it. Because Anthony Davis, I think there's an interesting thing where I'm almost like, when I watch him, like, has the NBA left him behind a little bit? Has the NBA left behind this guy that's not necessarily like a dribble a handoff guy that's shooting, what did Zach Lowe say, like 17%, 27% from long mid-range, for a guy that wants to get his touches in the low post and has these little floaters that are effective, but like not quite as effective as when you see some of these other actions? But we're on the court together, they can sometimes sing. And especially in the playoffs, when you see Anthony Davis just turn into a wrecking ball on defense. There are times, I don't even remember who I was watching, but there were a couple, oh, it was the Cavaliers, where Donovan Mitchell had a huge dunk on the Lakers. And Davis, like, had a second where he could spring up and block it. And I'm like, man, I want to see more of that effort in the regular season. Don't just save it for the playoffs. I want to see you bring some of this defensive gravitas to the regular season. And I think when they're together and really clicking there, they add to each other both defensively and offensively. But the age thing's an issue. The self-creation from Davis is an issue. But they make beautiful music out there together, Ben.
I figured out who the team I forgot is.
Who?
When we get to it at the end of the episode, it will just be the most fitting thing. Okay. Yes, I'm not sure I'm going to change my list. Oh my God. At number five. Again, I had to figure out how to pay the old age tax here and the playoff reliability tax and what's going on. Cody's face, Cody, if you're watching on YouTube, Cody's face is just cracking me up in anticipation of me saying Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, number five. And this is just like a couple things. This is one, pure synergy. We've talked about it so much over the years, offense, defense. And in both cases, you have historically great offensive and defensive players. They're on the back nine of their career. Curry's still great, but he's not quite as great as he was. And Draymond's still very good, but not quite where he was a couple years ago at his peak. But they're both so versatile in their roles. You know, you can play them on ball, off ball. You can play them as bigs. You can start, you stick them on a wing. You can play them in small ball. You defensively, you can play them in jumbo lineups if you wanted to. There's just a ton going on there. And then I think the actual synergy between having this offensive versatile piece and this defensive versatile piece, and especially since Green is such a great passer, you do get into some construction issues when, you know, you pair him with other players and you ask him to do like shooting or anything else. But if he's going to have Steph Curry out there, you would think you want motion heavy systems to play off his movement and his gravity. So Green is a great pairing. So I still think they're really, really great as a pairing. And I actually think so much of what's happened in Golden State is just everything else around them kind of leveling down. Let's put it that way.
They're number 7 on my list, so right around the same area. Steph Curry, 32 points per 75, almost plus 11 efficiency.
Well, how does he do that, by the way?
He's unbelievable. Like, when you watch, I think the passing, I don't know if he's like has too much of a burden he's taking on right now. There's just weird vibes with the Warriors right now that I really can't figure out, and I think that's maybe taking them down like a notch or two. But like you said, the age thing, like, I don't know. They were just outsized by the aforementioned Lakers duo that we just talked about here. And I don't necessarily know how their age is going to continue, especially like Draymond Green. I don't know how effective he is against some of these bigger lineups when we get to the playoffs. And he's still a brilliant defensive player. He still makes great passes. I think he's a little bit more efficient scoring than he has the last couple of years. Again, small sample size, so I'm not 100% sure. I mean, the Golden State Warriors are like a masterclass in sample sizes right now. They just have to be telling themselves that, like, you can't go off a 15-game sample size. But I don't know. Steph Curry is still like a top 5 player in the league, and Draymond being whatever he is defensively and with his passing, that's good enough for me to make it into like a top 7-ish team.
Yeah, exactly. I think the synergy there, it's we've talked about it throughout the episode. This is might be the ultimate example of that synergy taking place, where Golden State has not been very good this year. It's uninspiring to look at. We'll skip Nerd Corner on this one. We don't want to let Cody go off on these numbers. Let's get to the big kahunas.
It's tough.
Top four. These top four are guys that I at least initially considered for sort of like the top of this tier, and I ended up feeling somewhat comfortable about where they land right now. I'm going to go with Dame Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo at number 4. Is that okay? Are you going to have a big lecture about how they should be much lower?
What do you mean by lower? Like, not even on the list?
Yeah, like maybe not even in the top 10. Yeah.
My tune has changed, Ben.
Oh, whoa.
My tune has changed.
You're saying the 400 minutes together they've played and outscored teams by a whopping 2 points per 100 is moved you?
Oh yeah. What I've been seeing on the court lately, I'm like, I see the vision.
Now,
like,
yes,
offensively,
yes.
I see the vision.
Yes, yeah.
They're my number 2 on the list.
Yeah,
they're number 2 on my list. And I think a big thing, like, starting the year, I was genuinely concerned about some of Giannis's decision making, like. The pull-up jumpers, I feel like some of those have been cleaned out a little bit more, right? I'm not seeing quite as many in the last couple of games. Maybe it's just the games I've caught or the sections I've caught, but it seems like there's been a couple times where he's dribbled up and you're like, oh, I see it, but then he passes out of it. The passing has improved. I thought the decision-making with his reads, I think finally figuring out the offense a little bit more and being able to find guys in their spots, some of the dump-off passes, they're working out a little bit more. But then the interplay between the two, right? Like, Giannis, newsflash, Ben, Giannis is really good at basketball. And I think the thing that's really underrated offensively with him is, like, you know, people are like, oh, you just build a wall and stop him. He doesn't have a bag to fight it. But you know what a wall takes, Ben? A wall takes multiple players. So, like, there are times where it's, like, not even transition. He's bringing the ball up. And I'm thinking of, like, the Heat game. I think there's quite a few different examples of this. And he's just, like, bringing the ball up casually. They just have three guys that are completely bending their own defense to try and wall him off from getting anywhere. And there's been a couple times it's like, oh, okay, I'll just skip it over here to Pat Connaughton for an open three, right? Or Dame Lillard's coming. He gets a, you know, handoff from Giannis. Bam's dropping against him. And then Giannis starts rolling, and Bam, like, is looking away from the driving Damian Lillard. An excellent driving player. He's looking away from him to completely focus on Giannis rolling down there. Lillard gets an easy dump off pass to Lopez, gets a layup out of there. Right. So I think once they figure out like the immense gravity that Giannis has and Dame Lillard, once he starts actually making some threes, I don't know if I can say more than one other duo that I think is better in the league.
Wow. You've really changed your tune on this quite a bit.
I have.
Yeah. Well, I do like the idea of their pick and roll game. I don't know how much I love. I mean, here, let's do this question. We did it with Harden and Embiid a couple years ago. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like the fit between these two players? I'll say offensively. Let's say that.
Giannis and Dame.
Yeah, Giannis and Dame.
Scale of 1 to 10. Wow. Higher than a 5, but lower than a 9. So like maybe like a 6.5.
That's a broad range. Also, I felt like you were channeling Chef John from Food Wishes for a second. You were like higher than a 9.
I missed that reference.
Come on, Cody.
I apologize.
Anyway.
Is it about where you would land with these two offensively?
It is. I would not have it at a 9. No, that's too high.
I said 6.5, 7-ish.
Yeah. That feels about right.
Okay.
That feels about right. Yeah.
So I think that's one aspect of it, but you also have the aspect where Damian Lillard, not a great defensive player. I got to say, I've seen him like trying a few times. I've seen him giving some effort, but he's just
seen
not
him trying on defense.
Yeah, he's not a particularly talented defensive player, but Giannis is able to cover for a lot of that. So you also do have this interplay on defense where I'm not saying they help each other. It's just like one player has strengths that covers the other one's weaknesses.
I have to correct what I said earlier. The Bucks are actually only outscoring teams by 1 point per 100 possessions when they play this year. And when they both go to the bench, the Bucks are being outscored by 0.5 point. Almost no difference. Who needs those two players? That's what the small sample data says so far.
You remember last episode when you yelled at me for looking at numbers?
In small samples?
You were like, this is an eye test. This is a pure Hooper podcast. Get those numbers out of here. PBP stats, get me a PBJ sandwich.
I've never said any of that. The PBJ sandwich I could have said.
I had one before the pod. That was a good source of energy. Like the Uncrustables, they bang so much.
They're all right, nice. So here we go. I sense this might be it. The fisticuffs might come on this one, okay? My number three. They could be higher too. Like I feel like you're going to throw the cold water on this, but I think they could be higher. I think they're really good.
Okay.
The Phoenix Suns duo of Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. Those guys are very good. You have them number four?
Yep, I have them number four on my list.
Here's the thing about Durant and Booker as a duo that I love so much. They have these complementary skills where the shooting and the off-ball game can go both directions. So Booker can drive and draw defense and kick it and set up Durant. And Durant can not only make these shots, but he has this incredibly high release point, as we all know about. So that means if a defender slides only a little bit off of Durant to help in Booker's driving lane, he can kick it to Durant. Durant can catch it and shoot it without much space, and it's still a comfortable shot that he's basically created for him. In the other direction, Durant can have the ball. He can draw defensive attention. He can shoot it to Booker. And not only can Booker take the shot himself from the outside as an elite three-point shooter, I think he's, 43 or 45% on the season as of right now. But the other thing that Booker can do is he can attack the closeout really, really well. And so it's like if Durant gets a little space, he can shoot. If Booker gets a little space and they move the defense toward Durant, Booker can then catch it and go right away. And he's been so decisive with his actions this season, Cody. That's the thing that really jumps out to me about Devin Booker. We have some improved athleticism in the basketball sense, like quicker first step, better burst on the second stride when he turns the corner. And then the big elevation. He's always been like a high release Kobe Bryant, like jump and try to shoot over you. But everything looks better from that sense. And when you put them together, to me, what you get is these guys that are playing off each other, drive and kick, three-point shooting, draw doubles, transition, run to the line, or maybe get some isolation. You get all those things working in synergy together. They're both like 40-plus three-point percent shooters. The entire thing is just really, really, really easy to build around offensively. Phoenix doesn't even have that many other good parts out there right now, and they're doing pretty well just based on the nuclear explosion that these players provide. And it's exactly what we saw in the playoffs against Denver last season, when it was like they were just throwing haymakers at each other because Booker and Durant can literally go for 40 without really contrasting and taking away from the other player.
Yeah, that was beautiful, Ben. You nailed that. The only thing I have to add is Todd Whitehead on X, the website formerly known as Twitter, has this great little graphic where he tweeted out, he posted, I'm going to keep saying tweeted out because saying posted out, He tweeted out this little chart, basically, that shows the release height of different NBA players in the league. And I think Kevin Durant actually has the second highest release point in the NBA at like 9 foot. It looks around 9 foot, 7 inches. And I think Victor Wembanyama is literally the only player on this chart that has a higher release point. So I just wanted to add to that. It's a really cool graphic if you want to check that out.
Yeah, that is a really fun graphic. We should also point out that, what did we say Booker was shooting? 43% from three?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, he's been fantastic this year shooting the basketball. Durant obviously is one of the great shooters we've seen. And Phoenix in 400 minutes with these guys on the court is, 180 minutes with these guys on the court is plus 6.5. And when they go to the bench for 130 minutes, they're being outscored by 22 points per 100 possessions. Very, very small sample size. Very, very small sample size. But I just think that's reflective of what we've seen in the beginning of the year. Those numbers will probably regress down and normalize a little bit. But I would not be surprised if we saw a big footprint from them because they are both playing at an extremely high level.
I do think that Durant has seen a bit of a dip in his efficiency during the playoffs the last couple seasons. That would be the one of the only things that really gives me pause from bumping them up a couple of spots here. And the fact that, like, yeah, they have some good synergy together, but I think there's a lot of times where I would like to see them in more actions together where they're directly influencing what's going on. But I didn't want to hold that against them too much. So I'm like, okay, maybe in a different situation we could see, like, you see some three-man actions where, like, you know, Durant's kind of like a horn situation. He pops out to three, Devin Booker drives, he gets some gravity from Durant. So I don't know. Maybe I'd like to see some more creativity in the sets where they're together, but I really can't hold them against them. We're in the same ballpark with them.
That only leaves two for me. It leaves three for Cody. It leaves three for Cody. It leaves two for me. We'll get to the team that is excluded in a second. But
they're number six on my list, by the way.
Okay.
The team you're not gonna
so for me, I have number two. Do you have the same number two?
No, Giannis and Dame are number two.
Number
I think
two.
We have the same number three. And the same number one.
Yeah. So number two for me is Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah,
and it starts with Embiid. It has a lot to do with Embiid. Maxey has defensive issues, but he's a point guard, so you can cover this up with different ways you build around the roster, whether it's the shooting guard or the forwards. And then you're always going to have that rim protection and paint presence with Embiid behind you. Maxey is a great shooter, so he can play off of Embiid when you throw stuff at Embiid. He can play off of other players you want to put on the court that you could possibly pair with Embiid. Maxey's three-year wide-open three-point shooting, looking at our database on thinkingbasketball.net for subscribers, is 44% on his open threes. That's in the 85th percentile in the league. He can attack closeouts really well. Cody, as you've documented before many times on this show. So, and then he can play pick and roll with Embiid, and as we're seeing this year, they've changed that offense around. So you've got Embiid farther away from the basket, handoff game, moving more like we see Şengün and Jokic and Sabonis and these other big men from elbow to elbow, and Maxi's speed comes into play. So I think there's direct synergies with these guys. I think there's a high level of play with both of these guys, especially on offense, the shooting skill, and then you still get, as I said, built around Embiid, you still get that backstop defensively. I think I would take it over every other duo but one.
When I initially made my list, they were number two. It wasn't until a little bit later when I was like, okay, I'm feeling Damian Lillard and Giannis a little bit more. And I think there's one play I'm thinking of. And, you know, this goes back to kind of, we set this up early in the episode when we said just a little bit of change of scenery, like Nick Nurse coming in, James Harden leaving, kind of changing up like the tenor of what their offense looks like. It shows what these two guys are able to do together. And I think one action I'm thinking of is, we talked a little bit before about this pitch action where Tyrese Maxey just gets ahead of steal. Embiid might be dribbling towards him, gives him a little pass, and Maxey just blows by everyone with his blinding speed. But guess what, Ben? A couple of times I've seen it where they're like, you know what? What if we have the blinding speed point guard dribbling towards our 7'8", 500-pound center, and let him take that possession. So we have Maxi pitching to Embiid from the perimeter, and he starts going downhill, and everyone's like, oh my God, what do we do? Is he going to pull up for one of his dynamic mid-range jumpers? Is he going to go all the way to the rim and break it like a 19-whatever Shaq? And I think the inversion of kind of those sets, the ability for Nurse to be a little bit more creative with them, the fact that you can be creative with your best players is an asset. The fact that you can kind of experiment and things work, tell me that these are guys that oh yeah, they have some solid synergy together. So I have no problem with them. You having them at number two.
In that one rant, you had Tyrese Maxey having a steelhead, and you also had Joel Embiid at 7'8" doing something from a 19 Shaq. I think you meant a 1993 Shaq breaking the backboard.
Yep.
I think that's what you were thinking. I was with you the whole way. Yeah,
I didn't say anything about a steelhead.
You'll hear it when you listen back. You'll see it was a head of steel. He's coming downhill with a great head of steel. It was amazing.
Not a head of steam.
That was just the best.
You get my point though, right?
I was so with you the whole time. Yes,
that's all I need.
Yeah,
vibes, Ben.
The vibes were there. That leaves number one,
Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs.
You took Cole Anthony. You didn't take Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs.
Is that not the right answer? Did I fail?
I think Franz Wagner and Suggs are... No, we're kidding. We're kidding. If you haven't been following along at home and keeping track of this, of course, number one is Mitchell Robinson. Sorry, I read the wrong...
I was wondering if you were going to get Mitchell Robinson and Jalen Brunson.
I read the wrong thing. Yeah, I read the wrong thing. It's the guys in Denver, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. Some of my favorite shows we do, Cody, are the shows where you just get to number one and we don't even talk about number one. Yeah. We've talked about it. We've talked about it so many times, and it has everything to do with the two-man synergy. I've made multiple videos on it. I think I had a specific video in the playoffs after the Phoenix series just about their two-man synergy. And I think the argument for them is, where do they rank historically as an offensive duo? I think that's the more interesting argument, because you have arguably the greatest offensive player ever in Nikola Jokic, and you have Murray, and they just fit together so well because they can both have the ball, they can both play off ball, and the sets they like to run. Murray is very flowing, fluid. He's not a herky-jerky player, so he can shoot it on the move, he can catch these handoffs and hop into threes, but he can also basically play his entire game through and around Jokic. So I just think the center, you have two great offensive players. One of them might be the best ever, and then they also have synergy together. It's remarkable.
You got me thinking off the top of my head, who are the all-time duos that are up there?
How much time do we have?
Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah. How much time do we have? We'll do the next 2 hours on all-time. We should actually probably do that at some point, right? We should probably do all-time top duos, since we're going to do. We did this one. I was going to say it wasn't that painful, but we'll see. The comments haven't come in yet. We'll see what they say.
Can we talk about the duo that you left off the list?
Well, I forgot about them.
Oh, okay.
I did not intentionally leave them off the list, but the reason I forgot about them is I don't know if I'd have them in my top 10. Yeah, I actually think, looking at it and going through the arguments, I do not think I'd have them in my top 10.
So if I'm being honest with you, I wasn't going to rank them. You forced me into having a top 10 before this podcast, so I just kind of like threw a number next to them. I think they would end up in the same category as that whole list I had before, right?
Just
I think
the they would glob, end up the, same. Yeah. The morass.
The morass of duos.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. By the way, you should mention who you're talking about. You're talking about Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about.
Yeah. I think this episode, it's only fitting to end on this stat. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, this season when they're on the court, the Mavs are +2 in 300 minutes. And when they're off the court, the Mavs are +5 in 65 minutes. only 65 minutes. But what's funny is when Kyrie's on the court without Luka, they're also better than when they're on the court together. And when Luka's on the court with Kyrie, they're only a little worse than they're on the court together. So going back to the Garland Cleveland thing, I actually don't love them. When you stack up these other duos, I would not want to build around those two players. I'd want to build around Luka and somebody else. Mm-hmm. I just don't love it. I don't love it. Yeah.
I think there are ways that I could love it. Like when I think about their play styles in a different situation, I think those are two guys that you could have some more functional, synergistic sets with.
Just because of the offensive firepower?
Yeah, like Kyrie Irving is so good. Like I mean, this was like eons ago, but he coexisted pretty nicely with LeBron offensively. Like, and I know you've talked about shooting luck and stuff like that, but they produce some of the best playoff offenses ever. And Luka's offense isn't dissimilar from LeBron. I think Luka's probably a little bit more like, I got the ball. I'm not going to say the ball hogging word, but they're like similar in their style. So I feel like you could have something work.
Wow. Wow. Good thing we don't have aggregators. Luka and LeBron are similar.
Wait, man. Do you disagree with that?
No, not conceptually, but I think we've reached like a point where sometimes there's such lack of good faith with what people say. People will hear that and say you're equating the heights of Luka and LeBron. Of course, as well. I mean, there's this whole thing that I think is a Cody Hodek special theory about how Luka might actually kind of be a little bit overrated, right?
Ooh, we need to.
Yeah, we're gonna save that one. Slow the horses.
Listen, it's not because I saw the 500 tweet thread that somebody said this. If you've been listening for a while, I've been seeding this conversation for like a year at this point.
That thread was on Twitter. You're talking about?
Yeah.
If you want to support this show, check out patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. That's where we get a lot of the data that we use to research these episodes. And we look up stuff like 3-year shooting percentage and, you know, what's the luck adjusted performance of this team as the season unfolds and things like that. So, patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. It's the best way to directly support this show. And I don't know, Cody, what else you got planned for this weekend?
Well, trimester ended. I have a lot of grading and planning to do. Obviously got to fit in some basketball, but I'm not really sure. It feels like it's going to be a pretty work heavy weekend. Ben.
You had a lot of rants today. I want to do a rant before we get out of here. Ooh, for anyone who's just listening. John Jablonka. I don't know who John Jablonka is. This is on Twitter. John Jablonka. Jaime Jaquez Jr. is a hooper. Love it. He has a whole thread on Jaime.
Okay.
Whole thread. Love it. Here's my rant. In the middle of the tweet, he says, "Who would have thought that the Heat at pick number 18 would have such a steal? Love it. Sign me up for more. How do I get this content in my veins?" Then he says, "JJJ has been a clear top 5 rookie. I passed out. I went catatonic. I lost it." Are you with me? Did you feel the same pangs that I felt when I got to that sentence?
Are you saying that this person, like, you're agreeing with them?
JJJ, that's another person.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's Jared, yeah, man. Yeah, that's Jared Jackson. He's not a rookie.
Yeah, Jaime Jaquez Jr., JJJ. I didn't know what was happening.
I was following the concept. I wasn't even listening to like the specific name.
I get really thrown.
No, that's not right at all.
That's
What's
not right,
middle
right?
name?
I don't know. I get so thrown off by this, though.
Oh, he's a junior.
He's a junior, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's a, yeah. I get really thrown off when this happens, though. It would be like if we just casually referred to Mark Jackson as MJ. And we were just like, I was hanging out with MJ last week. I don't know. Are you with me on this? I went through this in football. Football is an American sport. Cody doesn't know what football is. It's a sport with like a thing and they try to run into the end zone. Okay. So Lawrence Taylor is arguably the greatest football player of all time. He's certainly one of the greatest defensive players of all time. And he goes by LT. Everybody knows him as LT. He's got earrings and jewelry, LT, LT, LT. And then this running back for the San Diego Chargers came along, and he was one of the greatest players to play. And his name was LaDainian Tomlinson. And I want to say in college, people called him like LDT because LT existed. And then he just started co-opting LT. It really throws me off. I don't know. I feel like this is like a weird, quirky thing for me.
I'm going to end this podcast on a bad note for you, Ben. When you say LT, I think of the second guy.
My point exactly. There you go. Yeah. Thanks for listening to our post-show rants. And in the case of Cody, his one-hour rant about every duo in the NBA. Hope you enjoyed this one all the way through. And of course, as always, we hope you are having a great day.